tardes. Gracias por acompañarnos hoy día. Tenemos con nosotros a estas personas en el ámbito de las leyes y particularmente vamos a trabajar el tema de datos privados. Me gustaría rápidamente hacer un saludo a las distintas salas. Sé que tenemos salas de Colombia, Argentina. Si pudieran hacer un saludo rápido, por favor, identificarse para después poder pasar las preguntas.
Ya están disponibles los micrófonos.
Buenas tardes, conectados desde México, la sala de CUDI, Marta Ávila, Eduardo Romero. Cedo la palabra a las siguientes salas, por favor. La Universidad Veracruzana puede identificarse.
Buenas tardes, aquí un equipo de trabajo, todos esperando a ver la ponencia. Muchas gracias.
Gracias.
Ahí lo abro. Aló, buenas tardes.
¿Quién más nos acompaña?
Hola, buenas tardes.
Permítame ver el equipo. Déjame ver el equipo. Ah, ya. Ya, yo lo que quiero saber es...
¿Quién está conectado?
Sí. Aló, buenas tardes. Estamos aquí desde la Universidad Nacional de Colombia. Gracias.
Muy buenas tardes desde la Universidad de Ibagué. Muchas gracias por la invitación a la conferencia.
Bienvenidos, Universidad de Ibagué.
Buenas tardes. Hola, buenas tardes. Diego Duarte, Universidad Pontificia Bolivariana. Muchísimas gracias.
¿Alguna otra sala quiere saludar?
Hola, desde la Universidad Austral de Chile también.
Hola, Natalia, bienvenida.
Hola, Marcela.
¿Alguna otra sala?
Buenas tardes, de la Universidad Nacional de Cuyo, muchas gracias.
Bienvenido. Bien, iniciamos la presentación. Déjenme presentarles primero a las personas que nos acompañan. Está con nosotros Alejandra Moya, abogada, secretaria del Instituto de Derecho del Instituto de Derecho y Tecnología de Chile. También nos acompaña Lorena Donoso, académica de la Universidad de Chile, y por supuesto nuestro panelista. Voy a dejar la coordinación, la moderación a cargo de Alejandra para que nos presente al profesor y posteriormente damos por inicio a la presentación de hoy. Para los que estén conectados a través de streaming, recuerden que pueden enviar sus preguntas por Skype a la cuenta dia.virtuales. Los estaremos recibiendo. Muchas gracias y bienvenidos. Comenzamos.
Okay. Buenas tardes. Quiero presentar al doctor Sarempa, quien es autor de varios libros y artículos de derecho privado, derecho informático y teoría del derecho, y es uno de los más reputados especialistas en el tema de la interrelación entre el derecho y la tecnología en el norte de Europa. Es fundador, presidente honorario y exdirector del Instituto de Derecho Informático de la Universidad de Laponia. Ha trabajado en la Oficina de Protección de Datos de Finlandia, en la Biblioteca del Parlamento de Finlandia, es miembro del directorio del Consejo Consultivo Legal 13 de la Comisión Europea. Profesor de Derecho Privado y exdecano de la Facultad de Derecho de la Universidad de Laponia en Rovaniemi, miembro de la Academia Finlandesa de Ciencias y Letras en la sección Humanidades y, por cierto, licenciado en Derecho y doctor en Derecho por la Universidad de Helsinki. Y ahora daremos inicio a la presentación del doctor Zarempa respecto a cuyo título es El ingeniero en la digitalización.
Buenas tardes, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pity that I cannot speak in Spanish. In fact, I could, but it would be like a show, and because we should take this seriously, so in English. It's a pity. So I should speak about digitalization, which is very modern, in fact, a concept which does not contain so much, because we have been witnessing digitalization already very, very long time. My background, you could see, it is a lawyer's background, but also I have been, and I still am, the vice president of the Finnish Data Protection Board. And this is something which is containing me to technology. And then I have been teaching IT people more than 15 years in two universities, in Jyväskylä and Vaasa in Middle Finland. And those have been very, very fantastic situations, because I have got to know a lot about modern IT technology. So it's not only so that I will be teaching law. I must try to combine. However, my background is very clear. I am a law professor, and as you all know, so quite often people don't like law professors and lawyers. Who would like a lawyer? It's a question. And there are tensions between different professions and us lawyers. I try to show something why those tensions are not acceptable. When we are going forward, so I would like first try to tell that we are in a new society where all kind of supervisory authorities in Europe, but also in the whole world, are having a new role in our life. So I am a member of an independent supervisory authority. So those authorities, like data protection authorities, must be independent today. It's not exactly so here in Chile, but it's also here just now. The principle is almost the same. And following the new European data protection regulation, we are witnessing the age when independence is more and more important. And that independence is also giving us an obligation to follow what is the progress of IT. So independent authorities are totally something else than one part of state administration. And that about is my background. Well, at the moment we are getting the new. So here this slide is telling more about this independence idea. In EU Charter is the EU fundamental rights legislation. Charter we call it, not charter flight. There is Article 8 concerning protection of personal data. And there you can see, even there, the independence is really an elementary part. And when continuing, we can see also, please put one more. We can see also that the new European data protection regulation we have got a new regulation which is valid next year in May. It is in fact in force already, but it will be totally valid next year in May. Even there, they are speaking about independence. And now, when first we were telling that authorities must be independent, now they are telling what it may be, this independence. And when thinking about technology, I can read this by such a way that we must be more and more understanding the steps of technology, the new steps of modern IT technology. Really, we have this new EU regulation, and one important thing more is that we are witnessing the new age of constitutional rights, constitutional state, which does mean, again, that we must take data protection really more deeply and more seriously than earlier. That is something which quite many people, inside law and outside law, don't understand yet, but it's real. The reality, this state is not anymore the administrative state which it was some few years ago. Everywhere we are witnessing this age of constitutional law, constitutional state. And Paris principles, which are accepted in United Nations quite many years ago, they already say that constitutional state is something where authorities who are independent are playing an important role. So I have now been pointing up those elementary backgrounds. And once again, this age is totally, totally different from the legal point of view than it was 10 years, 15 years ago, as well as IT is now totally different than it was 10 years ago. And now we must combine together the new IT, the possibilities which IT does open, and the new constitutional state. Those principios de Paris, they are very important. Unfortunately, quite many people do remember those. Have you been inside those? Have you been thinking about those? I think that probably not, because even most lawyers don't remember those. And in this situation, we in Nordic countries, we have been thinking how legal informatics, as one of the most important disciplines today, how this legal informatics must be going on and how we can get it better. There you can see my country Finland, neighbor country Sweden, Norway, small Denmark, and then Iceland. And in Sweden, Norway, and Finland, and Denmark, legal informatics is a really important discipline where lawyers and IT people are discussing and working together. So we also have long history in the field of data protection. And what we have been witnessing, the new network society. Of course, we have been in network society quite long time, if we are thinking telephone networks, different kind of cables. But today, in the new network society, we are living so that we are depending on networks. The infrastructure is totally different than earlier. My colleague, Professor Jan van Dijk, has written about network society, and I have been continuing that. What does network society mean when we are thinking about the new information structure and the new infrastructure and when we are using IT? As I said, we are really based on IT and networks. That's why I don't speak about information society. I don't speak about knowledge society. I speak about information society. New information infrastructure is in use and we must use it. And at the same time, we have those fundamental rights, which are really important in digital justice and in everyday life. The same in Spanish. So, derechos fundamentales. Every single time when I open this Lumia, not anymore Nokia Lumia, but Lumia, however, and really do open it, I am, in fact, in an environment where fundamental rights are important. Can someone be listening me? Can someone be watching me? And so on. Where is my privacy when I am opening this tool? Which I am thinking that it's only a tool, but it's much more else. And that does mean that the network society is really a society where we must think IT seriously from the legal point of view as early as possible. So already when we are starting to design data systems, we must think about constitutional and basic rights. Which kind of template, which kind of system, which kind of information we are putting there, and how can people use that data system. That's all. That's kind of things and works which even lawyers must see as soon as possible. There must be cooperation. I have been speaking about legal data system design. Nowadays, internationally, we speak about privacy by design and data protection by design. But the legal planning of data systems is the most important. And at the same time, we are witnessing the age when United Nations is worried about the data systems and our privacy. So United Nations nominated 2015 my friend Professor Joseph Cannatacci as privacy rapporteur. For the first time, United Nations has a privacy rapporteur. Joe must, for example, think about what are the hidden backdoors of telephones, so-called smart telephones, which are the hidden backdoors of computers, and so on, and so on. And all that together, once again, does mean that we must have cooperation between IT people and lawyers. By the way, Professor Cannatacci comes from Malta. So, you have seen all kinds of lawyers. I have seen all kinds of lawyers. A typical lawyer is afraid of new technology. Please don't put the computer into my office. Was originally the main idea. Nowadays they are most using computers, but they probably don't understand computers, and they don't understand how data systems must be designed. And that's a problem. When I say that you should have lawyers with you when planning data systems, the main element is that which kind of lawyers? They should be able to understand what is going on and what kind of elements they are when planning that. And those lawyers, quite often, they come from the field of legal informatics. And let me already now here say that one elementary point in that our new European data protection regulation is that in European Parliament, Parliament of Europe, the man who was making the first report was a man who had passed European ULISP legal informatics diploma. So it's a diploma which 11 European institutes are producing, my institute and 10 others. And this parliament member had really passed that education, had that diploma, and did understand the wholeness, even from the technological point of view. How should we take seriously data protection? And then when we continue, so it's a good reason to ask which kind of skills such lawyers should have who are working in the network society seriously. And then we are really coming back to the basic elements of our education. The normal lawyer's education is not looking at IT so much, but it is thinking about, seeking about cases. A typical lawyer, both ladies here, they are seeking cases. Can we find similar cases and how important those are? And well, it's a good idea, but when thinking about those cases, quite often the cases, when they are Supreme Court cases, are having a 10 years history. Probably the same IT is not anymore in use when we are getting the case. So conservative lawyers are only looking at cases. You must and we must think about what is new today and how to avoid problems. Our professional toolbox must contain better tools, your toolbox and our toolbox. And that is a real problem today. I will now show to you one case from Finland. So 2 weeks ago, this is written last week, so we got a new case in Finland. So our Health and Welfare Institute, which is the leading administrative institute in the field of health and welfare, they had placed health data of over 6,000 people to internet. They were sensitive data, containing personal ID, ID number containing a lot of sensitive patient data. And what happened? When media was asking the opinion of the National Institute, they said that, sorry, it was a human error, only a mistake. Was it? No, no, no. It was not only a human error, and it was mostly something else. What else? I ask now. And I give my answer. It was a lock. It was a really gap or lacking data system planning. There should not be any such kind of data system which is giving this possibility. There should be alarming systems. The system should be built from the legal point of view by such a way that clumsy persons cannot be making harmful work and harmful actions. And of course, another elementary part in this, which kind of education should we give to those who are using data systems in public administration? In the Finnish law, there is a rule which does tell that everyone who is using the data system, using it from the terminal, should be educated. Well, what does it mean? IT and legal education. Only by that way we are really able to see what is the real system. And we in Finland, we say, like my teacher, Professor Audis Arniu, we say that the interpretation is okay only if it is inside the acceptable systems. Systematical interpretation is the main methodological tool. And the system which we are building, it's both legal and IT system. They are connected. So this my teacher is only 80 years old and still young, but not any IT man, because he does belong to the generation which was not so much using. However, we were both participating programming course at the beginning of 70s, GOBOL language course. Audis was there one day, I was there 3 days. And then we did see that programming is not for us. At that time it was not for us. And then we have those lawyers and technological people who are not willing to look how society and how IT are going on. They only open the law book, they only are reading the laws, they only are doing just like earlier. Similar programs, similar interpretations. And for example, one elementary mistake has been and is that into data system, you are putting ID number as a key element. Why? There are, of course, data systems where you do need the ID number, but all those documents which are coming out should be without ID numbers. And then processing data, you should avoid ID numbers. But many, many years in the field of IT, they have been teaching that when planning documents, you put first visible the personal ID number. It's a crime. Well, and then we are quite often afraid of technology. I think that this Highways and Locomotives Act in United Kingdom, it was a fantastic example of that. The first rule was that in car, there must be three drivers, two sitting inside and one walking in front, and it was first 60 meters before the car. And then when they made this amendment, it was 18 meters. So everyone can see that it was something exceptional in the history. But how about today? Do we have similar problems? In fact, the history of data protection legislation is partly starting with such kind of problem. Because in Sweden, they were 73 when getting the first Data Protection Act, so-called Personal Data Act. So they were afraid of what kind of problems big databases can occur. And they had an act containing the idea of required permit when using the computer, when making registers with personal data, you had to get a permit from administration. Well, do we have permit from the ministry to use this computer? So it was a totally terrible idea. But now we can see that inside there was even something very, very positive. Every single time when you are processing personal data, you must make an analysis of what kind of risks we do have. And that a European regulation is really giving you, me and you, and all the obligation to analyze the risk always. Well, that would be okay when thinking about data protection, but then you have access principle, which is an original Finnish principle, although was used first in Sweden when Finland was a part of Sweden. The priest, Mr. Anders Chydenius, was writing the first access right law. He was a man who was the Adam Smith of the North and thinking about freedoms. And he was writing that act when thinking about freedom of press. And this problem, freedom of press, freedom of speech connected to personal data protection, this triangle is still really important, and there are still not any clear solutions. How to solve it? It's a question. One answer is that we should have data systems which analyze the tension between access and data protection using artificial intelligence and giving answers to those who want to know how to use material for journalistic purposes. Because journalistic purposes are still a lot out of data protection. data protection and freedom of press are near each other, but mostly journalists are out of data protection. That's why we should plan data systems so that those documents which are coming out, electronic or paper documents, should be planned so that those which are going to media, they should contain only such extra material which the media can use, and other for other purposes, a special design too. And then when we continue now, still a little bit, how about the Google Spain case? Has it something new with us today? Yeah, it really has. Because it was a case which people have called as right to be forgotten case. Well, it is also that the right to be forgotten is now in our new regulation, but it's an old historical principle, not anything new. But what is new in that Google Spain case is that you have the right to be outside indexing when using those Seek machines. And that's something which people did not understand. Quite many people did not understand. And when planning our systems, we should have tools to really arrange the situation so that the right to be outside indexing is easy to use. And when I take it visible once again here, so I must admit that the Advocate General in that case was a man from Finland, my good friend. But he did not understand the situation. He was only discussing about the freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is very important. I'm not here because it was a question of the enterprises and internet services. It was the right to be outside indexing. And in the decision, the European Court was not even mentioned freedom of speech. They were only speaking about how the man could get his rights fulfilled in this system. And the court did not even give the did not use this concept, the right to be outside indexing. But it's a very good concept in this situation, telling a lot. For the first time, this concept was written by written out by my good colleague Lee Bygrave from Norway. And then we continue a little bit. Well, there you only can see what the court was how the court was giving out that case. We can go forward. The same in Spanish. It's so fine that nowadays you can get everything out from the European Court, European Union Court, so that you have all language versions in use. Well, back to my main idea. So we are really in a situation where well-designed Data systems are, in fact, everything. Everything in the network society. We should have really legally designed data systems. And that does mean really deep going cooperation between professions. So, I think that I am quite near the end. Well, this concept, data protection by design and by default. So, Ann Kevorkian has been using it. But even that principle is very old. All the time, the Finnish data protection legislation has been based on the same idea. We must look at the long part of information and we must design everything. Now, the concept is in the new EU legislation. Take it seriously. It is really a good concept. Ann Kevorkian was data protection ombudsman in Canada quite many years. So, what should I add to this? There is this article 25.1 in English and next to the Spanish version. Yes, there. It really is telling a lot. So even only this articulo, can open the window to acceptable data systems, personal data systems, and the use of those. That's why I have been speaking so often, even during this short lecture, so often about well-designed data systems. And I take the last one now. This is like the car where there are two drivers.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, this is a message to lawyers and the message to some IT people. Professor Emeritus Klaus Lenk is very well known in Europe and I think so that everywhere in the world. He was one of the first administration science people who were interested in the new IT-based data administration, IT-based administration. And he has written, only the machine part is designed when thinking about data systems. And if human behavior is modeled at all, this is in order to make sure that the technical part of the systems is correctly handled and working well. To put it in another way, we have good software engineers, but hardly any organizational architects being able to accommodate organization, IT, and people. And when I add to this, the legal designers, that is the wholeness. He has been speaking mostly about e-government. I don't speak about e-government. I speak about information government. It is a step forward. E-government was the age, living in the age, when we were taking computers into use in administration. We started to speak about e-government. Information government is a new, quite new concept, and it is really belonging to this age where we are really living in the network society based on data systems and new kind of administration, new kind of regulation, and new kind of human and basic rights. I think that those were the first 5 minutes which I had in mind, or something like that. So, if you have questions, so please. And I think that this whole slideshow is in the use. They can use this whole slideshow later.
The presentation?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Fine. You can get all those slides. Well, back.
One more?
Yeah, one more? So, we have been speaking about digital lawyers. That was the real idea to put this book. We have been speaking about digital lawyers. Do we have digital lawyers? Should we have digital lawyers? So, that was one elementary part in our discussion in the World Conference of Data Protection. And I think that we all, one from Italy, one from Uruguay, one from USA, and from Netherlands, we had the same idea. Constitutional rights are so important that we also do need digital lawyers. But we lawyers, we all must be digital lawyers. Due to data protection, due to information security, and due to the role of legal information in networks, we must be able to seek. And that has been something surprising in the Finnish discussion. Me, digital lawyer, never say many. But really, that is, and even you, on the other side, you must understand that the everyday processing of data quite often is processing personal data. And you must remember that information security is something very special. You cannot be without information security ideas. My last comment is here. Already this morning I was using this. What is that in my hand? You may say that it's memory stick. When you put it into the computer, it's a part of data system. There cannot be any acceptable data system which would be without connection to memory sticks. Too. How to use those, who can use those, how to keep the information there, where to put the sticks. And we have a lot of cases, thanks to the lost memory stick, unfortunately.
Yes.
That's the life. Once again, thanks.
Bueno, espero que les haya gustado, interesado tanto la presentación del Dr. Sarempa como me interesó a mí. Y quisiera saber si es que alguien tiene, alguna de las salas tiene alguna consulta respecto a la presentación que acabamos de presenciar. Yo voy a hacer una pregunta que me pareció que era interesante a propósito de lo que el doctor Sarempa acaba de decir. Doctor Sarempa, what do you understand by a digital lawyer? What traits must a digital lawyer have? It's not only to know how to use a computer. I understand you refer to something else, something more.
Yes. You must understand the combination of the use of computers, the use of data systems, the use of governmental material, and the possibilities which data systems are giving. And when you are a digital lawyer, really more than understanding data protection and understanding information society and security, so you must be able to open the discussion about which kind of services in the network society it is possible to give to citizens. Because mostly we are really working with the rights of citizens. Of course, there are companies and so on, true, but mostly with citizens. For example, when planning a new digital court, so we must think about the access to the court, the digital access to the court. We must think about how open or closed the data systems in the court, inside the court are, and which kind of information the court can give out to you, to other parties, to media, and so on. So it's not only that we think that courts are using computers and data systems. Not at all.
I have a question.
Yep.
Yes. Go ahead.
In your consideration, what business unit must have ownership of data privacy?
Ownership of data privacy. Well, I can tell to you that I was one of the members of the EU, European Union, legal advisory board in information market area. And we got into our meeting the first version of reuse of administrative information, the directive about the reuse of information materials. And at that time, it was 96. We had only one member. A man from Denmark who had the idea that the state, the public sector, does own the data which it has collected from citizens. Only one had that idea. And in our opinion, we said that everyone, every citizen, does own his own personal data. And we are only giving it to you, to limited use for state or municipalities, limited use for limited time. And that was something new to the European Commission, but later they didn't understand it. So we own our own data. And if someone else does use it, he must have a good reason to use it. So it must be legislated, or you have given your own permit to use it. And it has really been very difficult to old-fashioned administration to accept this. And I think that it's now very clear in Europe, but not so clear in some other countries, like, for example, China.
Thank you.
Was it? Yep, thanks.
Yes, it was very clear. Thank you.
Dr. Charempa, how has been the has it been accepted what you referred at the beginning of your presentation, the treatment of data without the ID numbers of the citizens? Is it done now that way?
It should be, but not yet, because, for example, many banks in the Nordic countries, most banks, I think so, are using personal data number as a key number. But just during the last week, there was in Finland one new working group nominated to modernize ID number. The Finnish and Swedish ID number is based on the thinking which we had at the beginning of 70s. And one mathematical man was making this personal ID number, which does contain, for example, your birthday and your gender. They are visible. And now we ask, why should we get another ID number which could be gender neutral and without anything about our age and our birthday? Or should we have different ID numbers? For example, two ID numbers, which we can choose when using data systems and when using public services. That's a question today. So the whole question about ID numbers is really, from the international point of view, interesting one. As you remember, so in United Kingdom, they did not accept ID number. And there has been a lot of problems in United States too. And then, for example, my colleague, Professor Peter Blume from Denmark, he has said that if we could have forecast what is going on, we could not take ID number into use at all. We should not have taken it. But of course, we must have some kind of signs and signals when organizing data systems and when organizing services. But the Nordic style, how often we are using the personal data ID number, it is not in balance with the constitutional state.
Thank you, Dr. Sarenpa. There is a question from Israel Velos Israel, the University of Yucatan, Mexico, UADY. And he has a doubt. Do you think all these elements you have talked about, legal slash technological elements, have been adequately addressed by the academy and the universities? Or do you think that it's necessary to work more on this on these issues?
Absolutely. In fact, we are now witnessing the beginning of the progress. And when thinking about what universities and different kind of institutes can do, so it is very important to try to find some elementary solutions how to go forward. One solution in the field of law has been the idea of legal informatics institutes. That idea, I think so, was first first in the mind of Professor Peter Seipel from Stockholm, who is the father of the first Norton Institute. And he was also the man who got Council of Europe to publish a recommendation that every single European nation member, Council of Europe member country should have at least one institute as an observatory. At least this is something. To have such kind of observatory where IT people, where lawyers, where administrative people are together working and planning. So this area is not any one person area at all. As we all know, so universities quite often are such that they are disciplines where there is only one professor. Today, it is not acceptable anymore at all, especially this observatory and cooperation idea is really something against that old tradition. And then when we are now just in the situation where we have this new European data protection regulation and this new privacy society, so we must test all the time if our attitudes and opinions are still valid. So it's, how to say it, 24 hours a day work. Everything is going on and we must do something. So a lot, we have a lot to do.
Si alguien quisiera hacer una pregunta en español, podemos ayudar con la traducción.
Sí.
Ajá. And when I was speaking about those institutes, I want to say that in Europe we have nowadays about 50, I think so, about 50 legal informatics or legal information institutes. And that is very interesting divide. We are discussing about legal information. Usually we are speaking about legal sources, but there can also be one part where we are thinking about IT information from the legal point of view. And then the other institutes where we are looking at information law, looking at information security, this new information government idea, and so on. So that area, the field, is really huge.
And do these institutes you're talking about, do they depend from universities or are more of independent observatories?
Mostly they are university institutes. And for example, in Nordic countries, we have three those. One in Sweden, in Stockholm, one in Norway, in Oslo, one in Lapland, my institute. And unfortunately, my institute is the smallest one, but really university institutes. But that is not really the only solution, because we should think about also other kind of institutes which are so much, not so much, strictly connected to teaching. But however, teaching legal informatics and teaching IT and law, it is something which should be obligatory in every law faculty.
And in engineering faculty have classes about law, digital law?
Not probably so often digital law. So it has been so in many countries that in engineer education that what has been called IT and law or technology and law has been only some kind of basic information delivery. What is law, what is agreement, and so on. But then when we are going further, so it can be legal informatics teaching. So I really have been teaching IT people many years, and for example, when I was in Jyväskylä, at Jyväskylä University teaching, so it was a special teaching. We started Friday at 4 p.m. And then we did continue Saturday until 3 p.m. Every single time, more than 100 IT students and me. And let me say that after that, I was totally tired because those questions were really so good and so challenging. And sometimes I was thinking that I should have a book to open and look at those IT concepts, which I did not know enough sometimes. But really, such kind of special teaching, it is something which we do need, we must have.
And it is considered in the new EU legislation, isn't it? The one you referred to at the beginning of the presentation? I mean, to the need of teaching the people that is using the database systems.
This new data protection regulation is quite funny book, we can say, because there has been a lot of addings when comparing the old directive which we had, and that's why it's not so easy to read. And how to put such kind of regulation to the basic material, to be the basic material for those who don't know enough legal concepts and legal ideas. Mm-hmm. However, when looking it, when reading it, you can see that one of the elements, which is not by so clear way written out, is that we must have more and more data protection, constitutional law, and basic rights education into the government, into the schools, and into the universities.
Yes.
And for example, this supervisory authority where I am working. So in our board, we have unfortunately only one IT person. And in the Finnish Data Ombudsman Office, which is the most important supervisory authority in Finland, there is a data ombudsman, so-called commissioner. We are using this Nordic concept, ombudsman, and administrative chief, and 22 people working only. And of those, only one is an engineer. It's a shame, let me say it. It's a shame, but such happens. It comes from the age when we were thinking that lawyers can really open everything. But it's, of course, not true.
Thank you, Professor Sorenpa. ¿Alguna otra consulta, pregunta, duda, comentario?
Parece que estamos en el tiempo, estamos en la hora.
Sí, estamos en la connected.
Hora. Bueno, de nuevo.
Excuse me, I have another question.
Yes,
yep.
Por favor.
What would be a good piece of advice regarding data classification? How it started?
Well, we are coming to the age of certifications. So it has been interesting that exactly data protection has been some kind of partly manual work. Of course, we are using computers and they are digital databases which we are using. But then when making decisions, it's manual work. And today, it is not a good idea to try to be digital and, however, to put everything to be depending on manual decision making, human brain's use in decision making. One point in our progress nowadays in the European regulation has been that everywhere the processing of personal data inside Europe should be similar. So it must be possible to send personal data into other countries of European Union. Similar rules, but also similar practices. And it does mean that we must have standards and we must have certifications. This certification process inside EU and in the field of data protection is quite new, but now it will be obligatory. And it does mean that when we are nowadays quite often thinking that it's harmful, this kind of data processing, and we should have something else to think about. So, standards and certifications, they minimize the risks of misunderstandings. And that's why I think that it's very positive that we are taking seriously certifications. And we have started already in Finland. There are some institutes who are giving certifications, but now most important is that we are finding in Europe general rules concerning certifications. That is, only that can guarantee that our daily processes are similar enough. So, thanks for that question. It was very important. And the question is really a question which everyone should keep in mind. Today, processing personal data should not be depending on one person's ideas when using keyboard. It should be something else. But I have one question to you. So, we had just in our board one case where one company wanted to get a permit to use artificial intelligence when giving opinions about credit data, credit word. So about that, who is able to get credit from the loan company or bank? And they wanted to get a permit. The man who had been written the paper was a very, very well-known Finnish lawyer who has also been teaching data protection. And we had to say that, sorry, we cannot give a permit because this kind of system is not acceptable. Already when we were taking into use the directive 95, it was accepted 95, already then we had a special rule concerning the situation where you would like to use automatic decision making when analyzing the identity and identities of a person. And the main reason was, in fact, that at that time, some companies in France, they were willing to use artificial intelligence in credit area. And the Commission said, no, we still are having the same. But, and that's why we cannot give the permit, but where is the limit? Where is the borderline when we are using all the time, however, computer systems? When are we coming to the area where something is forbidden, something automatic is forbidden? My answer was that when we are analyzing in computer systems, in data systems, the creditworthiness of people, so all the time when we are giving positive answers, when the system is giving positive answers, everything is okay. But when it's giving negative answers, it's the illegal use of artificial intelligence, and it's the illegal use of algorithms which are leading to one result. And just now in Germany, by the way, they are discussing about the need of special rules concerning algorithms. Which kind of algorithm we can use when analyzing people. I hope that it was acceptable answer.
Other question. ¿Cuál considera que sean las mejores medidas de seguridad administrativa que permita proteger los datos personales contra daño, pérdida o alteración? Alejandra.
Well, in fact, I must first say that
the best security administrative.
Measures, safety measures, do you think are the best for protecting personal data against harm, loss, or change? The best administrative measures.
Yeah, so I didn't understand a lot, but not all.
Yes, yes, yes.
For sure.
Well, one basic answer has been that we have those, of course, those technical solutions, which are typical in all use, all kind of use of data systems and networks, traditional. But you were thinking about mostly about the content problematics, I think. So, so anonymizing and pseudonymizing systems are still very remarkable, and nowadays this new regulation is speaking about both how to anonymize and how to pseudonymize. And quite often it has been so that lawyers don't understand what is anonymization. From the legal point of view, anonymization is that you are making the material, such kind of material, which is not anymore possible to take back into use with ID numbers or something. And pseudonymization is giving a solution that it can be out of the hands of other people, but you yourself can take it back into your use. And it was very good idea to put those both visible in the new regulation. So that is a good solution. But then, when we are speaking about information security, for example, law offices, and all kind of offices, in fact, should always have even an extra system.
Yes.
First it was said that well, it's too expensive, we cannot buy a new laptop, we cannot have two laptops. That age is over. But really, whatever we are doing, so the extra system is something very important. One example from Finland once again. In our system, we have only two big medical products and medicines shops which are selling medicines to pharmacies. Only big, two big shops. And the second one, which has about 60% of the market, did take into use a new IT system. And now, about 1 month, we have had a lot of problems. because the pharmacies are not getting medicines early enough, and sometimes they must wait for many days, and they can be that kind of medicines which are, for example, to cancer patients and so on and so on. A very critical situation. They only said, sorry, we were taking into use a new system and it takes time to get it to be ready. It should never, never, ever possible anymore to make this kind of infrastructure, critical infrastructure, a mistake. And this is also telling, so think I, this is also telling about this risk element. Every single time when we are organizing something by a new way, we must think about the risk which we are taking and the idea of societal infrastructures. And then in this kind of solution, situation, we must be ready to accept that it can take a lot of money, but thanks to our basic and constitutional rights, we must be ready to pay. So was it the right answer to the good question, or should I say something else too?
Okay.
Once again, this Finnish medical situation, medicines situation, it really is a fantastic story about the situation where very well-known international IT company has been delivering such a system which is difficult to take into use. It was not only the Finnish company, but internationally very well known company. And this company was in the same market. And that's why the planning was not good enough.
A similar case with the use of the energy company. They when they changed the administrative, the IT system, and they couldn't facturar, send the bills to all an important part of the clients.
Yeah.
And it's something like you say, it was, they said they didn't have the money to have a backup system when they changed the primary system.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is something really which I am worried about. We have now been witnessing the age of computers quite long time, and we have been taking computers into commercial use already during 50s, at the end of 50s at least, and then nowadays we can say that everything is depending on computers and data systems. And at the same time we are witnessing even more and more basic elementary mistakes.
In that same line of thought, because in this case what happened in Chile was that the company was heavily fined, because it saved money at the first, but in the long run it lost money in order to give the right signal to all to the market. Do you have, in Finland, do you have the ombudsman has the possibility of imposing fines to the...
Well, thanks for that question. So in Finland, we don't know any administrative fines The ombudsman cannot give any fines. And we in the Data Protection Board, we also have only a limited possibility to put fines in such a situation where the company has or private person has not followed the orders which we and the ombudsman have been giving. But those real big administrative fines, they don't belong to our procedural area. But now, in the new situation, EU situation, there are a lot of possibilities to give administrative fines. And this is partly okay and partly problematic. So it is taking a lot of time and thinking in which situation we are really giving those fines. We know, Lorena does know, that in Spain there has been in this field in use administrative fines. And they had a situation which is not so good when they were giving quite big fine, and later the Supreme Court said that it was not legal. And they had to give the money back, and it must be some kind of system where you can not go to such situations. But really, if they are not taking seriously, if companies are not taking seriously, so of course we must have those administrative fines. They are much better tools than criminal fines.
Of course.
But concerning criminal situation, I must admit that I am guilty, and badly. Why? Because when we were drafting our Data Protection Act, we did not take seriously enough information security. And that's why false processing data so that information security is not fulfilled. It's not a, not a real crime. You can only get some fines, very small fines. That was the result of lacking thinking.
No hay más preguntas. Sí. Muchas gracias, doctor Zarempa. Muchas gracias a todos los que participaron en esta conferencia.
Y gracias a Clara también.
Gracias a Clara, por cierto, por darnos
la oportunidad
y las facilidades. Sí.
Les agradecemos a todos los que estuvieron con nosotros. Vamos a ver si armamos algún grupo de trabajo que sea una mezcla entre el área legal y el área de ingeniería. Creo que es un buen tema para hablar dentro de la comunidad ética. Agradecemos particularmente a CUDI que nos acompaña siempre y que nos ayuda hoy día con la plataforma tecnológica. Hasta la próxima vez. Gracias a todos los que estuvieron presentes. Gracias, profesor.
Gracias. And next time, I hope so, a little bit more Spanish.